So I see someone asking a question on Twitter. I need help. Jean short overalls, yay or nay?
If you have to ask.
Then the answer is yes?
Yes. I would say nay.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be my vote. What would your vote be?
I think I'm just going to say yay because it sounds like, why not? Why shouldn't people try new things?
They're not new, though. Jean short overalls?
Okay. I'm just thinking that it might look kind of cool.
Especially if they only have one strap up. I have a woman here who says she found some of the healthy food at Progressive Field. Fruit cup for $4. Thanks, at Indians. Yum, Tribe Town.
Oh, so that it's hard to tell if that's an ironic tweet or not, but I don't think it was.
I don't think it is.
But okay, well, good. Well, I'm glad she was satisfied then.
$4.
Yeah, well, that for a baseball park, that's pretty reasonable.
You could. There is also a Subway there if you want to get some vegetarian.
That's
fare.
Where you usually go.
Yeah, and relatively healthy, I guess, compared to everything else.
Yeah, compared to a lot of the stadium food and the nachos. And
I wonder
the
where she found that fruit cup.
Yeah, I know it's like in the outfield is where all the good beer is, back behind the bleachers and stuff. Although there's that whole bar in center field, but then behind right field, there's a lot of places to get beer, and then tucked in behind the left field bleachers even. But, you know, I mean, the Indians, you know, it's like, I think the last time we talked about the Indians on the podcast, I said they were in last place at the time. And now I think they're in second to last place behind the Chicago White Sox.
Last place, did you say?
Yeah, last place in the standings. You know, okay. Like the Indians are only in second to last place now.
Wow. I guess it's better than nothing, right?
Yeah.
But still not great.
No, they're terrible.
They haven't been good since we lived here.
No, they haven't. Yeah. So they've been bad for about 5 years.
And the Browns have always been bad. And well, LeBron James left.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron James wasn't really much of a winner anyway. I mean, he had people like to revise history and say that the teams here were hopeless. I mean, that last year where they were trying to bolt together a team with Shaq. I mean, that was pretty much a joke, you know? Oh, we're going to reign for the king. Remember all that? Like, his big mouth, you know? Whatever came of that, you know? So it was the organization is sort of a joke. I mean, you know, they have that Kyrie Irving guy, but, yeah, they're not a winning team, and they lost a lot of their games. And I think we mentioned that Byron Scott had been fired, but we didn't really go into detail about that. You know, like, do you know that they actually did make good on they actually did hire Mike Brown again?
I saw that, and I just thought, you know, did we not remember what happened last time? And I guess he's back. It's just weird. But, hey, it's sports. Maybe he'll do something. I don't know. Then they were also talking about LeBron coming back, too, right?
Well, that was one of those rumors that I think maybe LeBron James actually fueled himself. But it's all hype. It's all PR. It's pretty much inconceivable that he would come back to an organization after leaving the way he did and after all that, you know, the decision and all that. Like, I mean, think about it. Think about, like, the likelihood of it really happening.
Yeah, and I think, don't they, coaches kind of get fired and hired, like, you know, in seasons halfway through?
Yeah, that happens a lot in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I guess a coach coming back to an organization and stuff happening, yeah, at strange times is very much a common NBA thing, you're right. But I say, like, why bring Mike Brown back? I don't understand that. You know, there's a lot of qualified candidates.
Yeah, like who? Who would you pick?
Well, who would I pick? I mean, you got to agree to find, to get the person to coach for your team, right? So they, I think they floated a pointless rumor that Phil Jackson was called, you know, about the job. But Phil Jackson probably wouldn't want to coach the Cavaliers, and they probably didn't even mean it seriously. But they have they have guys that they could hire from places. They could hire away a college coach. You know, there's good college coaches out there, like, you know, Tom Izzo and Mike Krzyzewski. I'm not sure those guys are available, but if you go down maybe one level in the college ranks, you could probably find a pretty good coach. And then think about the guys that are I don't know if Larry Brown is on the market. You know, I don't know if the former Bulls coach Bill Cartwright. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there that are qualified that could coach a team. And so I would say that they should just look more broadly than just guys that have been here before. I mean, isn't that strange? You have, you fire a coach supposedly to placate LeBron James, and he leaves town anyway. You hire this Byron Scott guy in this rebuilding phase. The team loses a ton. You fire him and you hire Mike Brown back?
Yeah. It doesn't make much sense.
So, you ever wonder what Pat Buchanan thought about Israel?
Not really. But I bet he doesn't like it.
Well, there's all this talk about Iran, right? And there's these stupid morons that are well, right now a lot of those same idiots are saying that there should be a war with Syria, right? But the only reason we're hearing about that is because that's just the thing that's being pushed at the moment. The idea of a stupid war against Syria, right? Mm-hmm. Getting involved in a Syrian civil war. But they've been going on and on about Iran forever, right? And isn't it interesting that they're always saying that Iran is a few months away from being a major danger, from having a certain kind of weapon? So this is Russia Today, who often kind of takes up issues that maybe aren't, you know, discussed in the mainstream American media very broadly. This is Russia Today interviewing Pat Buchanan. Let's see if I can find an interesting part.
Judgment to continue to carry this enormous burden of defending 40 or 50 countries around the world. And so I think we're going to have to dismantle these bases. We're going to have to come back from Asia, come back from the Middle East and South Asia. And I think we're going to have to bring the troops home from Europe.
You were writing and speaking out extensively about the Bush era crusade under the banner of ending tyranny in the world. Do you think that crusade is still on?
The idea that we're going to end tyranny in the world is utterly utopian. We never are. We've had tyrants from time immemorial. And what the United States should do, in my judgment, in its foreign policies, is build a defense establishment strong enough to protect our vital interests and our vital allies. And when problems arise, whether it's in Zimbabwe or somewhere else, the people there have got to deal with their own problems. There are no doubt about it that throughout history, tyrants have arisen and seized power in one place or another, and as long as they don't threaten our vital interest or threaten and kill our people, the fact that they rule and or misrule certain countries is none of our business.
Osama bin Laden's successor said he supports the war against Assad in Syria, and Al-Qaeda was reportedly behind the 4 suicide bombings, which killed scores of Syrian
officials. See, they're pushing the Syria meme.
Soldiers in Damascus and Aleppo. Doesn't it seem strange that the U.S. is on the same side with Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it does indeed. Listen, the Assad government has been ruthless and brutal in suppressing the uprising and the insurgency against it. Not as brutal as his father was, Hafez al-Assad, who slaughtered 20,000 people in 1982 when they rose up. And it would probably be a good thing if he departed and they had a more democratic government. But your point is well taken. The United States should ask itself not only what is the character of this regime, but the first question should be, do we have a vital interest in who rules Syria?
I mean, well, there you go. I mean, why can't that question be asked? I don't personally understand why, you know, we have to have it sold to us that we have to go intervene. There's this nonsense talk about red lines that, of course, Obama just, he uses his rhetoric, and then it turns out, of course, he doesn't really want to go into a war in Syria. So he talked about red lines, you know, and that now he's being like, you know, there's these right-wing idiots that are trying to push the whole, the fact that he used the red line terminology to go to war. You know what I mean? Can you imagine another Middle Eastern war?
No, I think it's not something that we can really sustain. You know, the dredging up of old hatred and more killing, you know, of innocent lives.
Well, yeah, and all they're going to do is they're going to, like, the way, I mean, it's like was said, you know, the Assad guy isn't doing, you know, the right thing, but first of all, does America have a vital interest in Syria? And second of all, what would happen if we, you know, toppled this guy? Like it was sold to us. Of course, I never believed it. You never believed it. But people had the idea sold that getting rid of Saddam Hussein was going to unlock prosperity in Iraq. And it's actually been the opposite. Iraq is doing very poorly. And it sells a lot of violence. Getting rid of Saddam Hussein is something that stupid Bush library pushes. And, you know, like, have you heard about how stupid that thing is?
I've heard bits and pieces. Like, the location's really weird, too.
Well, it's somewhere, like, in Dallas, so... Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, like, the whole thing is apparently a... I mean, it's a mockery of a library. It has this stupid interactive video exhibit, like a really bad national park kind of library.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, I think, like, let's see.
Bush Library Flash Mob.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. There was something... I mean, it was probably people talking about how he's a war criminal or something, or hopefully. Because that guy, you know, that guy is an absolute fucking war criminal. And the whole idea that that he, you know, would be given any kind of respect at this point. I mean, there are a lot of these stupid revisionists that want everybody to just cloud their memory and forget everything and forget what a uniquely bad president this guy was. Obama is doing a lot of things wrong. He's making a lot of mistakes. You know, the drones among them. But George W. Bush was a cynical, tyrannical, despotic, you know, criminal screw-up. And the guy should just, you know, there should be a more, you know, honest reckoning just a few years out with his real legacy. And frankly, I think Obama is helping obscure all that by you know, like appearing at the Bush Library dedication. I guess all the former presidents and the current one appeared, but I don't know. I still am kind of against it. Let's see. So Rachel Maddow did a report about the Bush Library, but of course she's starting with the history lesson about Calvin Coolidge. Let's see. I'm sure that's interesting, but... Well, now she's up to Nixon. Yeah, it comes with like a history lesson.
We'll see. All the presidential libraries?
Well, no, she's probably skipping around to ones that she's... I don't know. Well, there's a map. See, there's a graphic with all the different locations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Arizona. They had nothing to do with Nixon, but he looms over that state like a death's head. They support the Israeli. Before today, this map showed all of the different places that you could go in the country as a member of the public to explore our modern presidents and the things they have preserved for history about their presidency. Well, as of today, as of May 1st, 2013, you can add a new one. Brochure is now out of date. Down there by LBJ and Poppy Bush in Dallas, Texas, today, the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Museum officially opened to the public for the first time. And I think it is important to know, I think it should probably be said every time somebody notes that there is a George W. Bush Presidential Library. I think it should be said every time that this is, rather bluntly, a museum that is designed to make you think that the Iraq War was a great idea. Seriously.
there's a game that you play inside the George W. Bush Presidential Library, and there have been all these sort of vague print press descriptions about this game, that it lets you decide. It sensitively handles the various controversies of the Bush presidency by letting you decide. No. We finally today got footage of the game being played. We got permission from the library. We sent a crew down there with a camera this morning to show, so we could see for ourselves, what happens when you play the game. And it's amazing. The library is open to the public for the first time as of today. And this is what's happening there today, when people from here on out go to the George W. Bush Presidential Library to play the Decision Points game. This is what happens. Watch.
George W. Bush made many tough decisions as president. Now you'll get a flavor.
Stupid ass Andrew Kern.
Take a look at the list of scenarios in front of you. First, you will select which one you want to tackle.
The majority of the theater chose the threat of Saddam Hussein. President Bush had to make a choice. One, seek another UN resolution. Two, lead an international coalition to remove Saddam. Three, take no action and accept that Saddam Hussein will remain in power. You are about to select expert advice from a variety of people. Just as President Bush did, you will have to weigh conflicting points of view. Okay, we're ready to start. Work fast. The clock is ticking.
So with a literal drumbeat, an actual drumbeat to war coming out of the speakers inside the theater, you then go about soliciting advice from members of the intelligence community.
You know what I think.
From the Congress, from your White House advisors. And while you are getting all that advice, while you're getting those briefings, you get interrupted by ominous breaking news developments.
If we act to depose him, other countries could use our actions to wage unjustified wars in the future.
Chemical warheads found or not on the declared list. This is the first really solid evidence that Iraq's declaration was incomplete.
After you deal with all the breaking news interruptions about new weapons that weren't disclosed before being discovered, and after you solicit all the advice from your fake actor experts, it's finally time to make a decision. And they do set up these three options for you to choose from, right? You can seek a new UN resolution. Okay, that makes sense. You can invade. Of course, they don't say invade. They say lead an international coalition, which means invade. And if you want to not invade, what's the label for not invading? That choice is labeled take no action. So that's the neutral presentation of options here. You can lead or you can do nothing. If you choose to do nothing, well, President Bush's former White House chief of staff then appears on screen and very obviously expresses his disappointment.
Time's up. It's time to make a decision. You were asked how to address
the
president.
You're going to lose a tooth. You'll lose a fucking tooth.
The people in the theater today decided to take no action and accept that Saddam Hussein will remain in power.
And accept that. Hello, wusses. Andy Carr doesn't just stop there, though, with his disapproving, almost disbelieving look. He then introduces President Bush to come on screen and make the case for why the correct answer is actually that you should have invaded.
They don't accept what the people have to say. This democracy
was that you would get historical footage of George W. Bush from during his presidency, you know, documenting the history of how the Bush presidency actually handled this issue at the time. But as you can see,
it's just like his presidency.
President Bush,
even though people didn't want him, he still ended up on the TV.
George W. Bush taped recently, still making the case today that invading Iraq is the right answer.
My first choice was to use diplomacy rather than putting American troops into harm's way.
First choice, diplomacy. He goes on to explain all the UN resolutions that were passed to try to get Saddam Hussein to comply. Then he launches right into this explanation for why invading Iraq was the right thing to do. Because smoking gun was going to be a mushroom cloud. Because Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. Saddam being linked to terrorist groups. Seriously.
After 9/11, the stakes were too high to trust the dictator's word against the weight of evidence and the consensus of the world.
You are an alcoholic.
Saddam posed too big a risk to ignore. He had used weapons of mass destruction in the past, showed every sign of continuing to pursue such weapons, and supported international terrorist organizations.
He's still going on.
It's a joke. It's a fucking joke. It's a departure.
25 million Iraqis have the chance to live in freedom, build a free society. The new democracy in Iraq
is a free society. Yeah, I don't think
part
so.
Of the Middle East, and a beacon of hope to reformers around the world.
Imagine at the Bill Clinton Presidential Library, an interactive exhibit designed to prove that he did not have sexual relations with that woman. Imagine an interactive Meet Tricky Dick hologram exhibit at the Nixon Library showing you point by point the ways in which he really isn't a crook. You know, the weight of evidence did not show that we had to invade Iraq. There was no consensus of the world that we had to invade Iraq. When we invaded Iraq, look at this. Every country in the map that is shaded blue here, every country on this map shaded in blue was against us invading Iraq. Does it seem like there was a world consensus that we should invade Iraq?
No.
The head of the UN at the time said that he considered that invasion to be illegal. The consensus of the world was that George W. Bush had to lead an international coalition to invade Iraq? Are you serious? These little kids, who as of today are going to our nation's newest presidential library to learn the unvarnished history about this presidency, are being told that Saddam Hussein showed every sign of continuing to pursue weapons of mass destruction. The case to invade Iraq was not mistaken. The case to invade Iraq was cooked up. It was a hoax perpetrated on the American people. And they are still cooking it up right now, 10 years to the day after the mission accomplished speech. As if the last 10 years never happened. This is how kids right now, as of today, are being taught that part of our nation's history. I kind of think this is a national scandal.
A national scandal. What do you think?
Well, I think she has a point.
Yeah.
So, legendary Smiths guitarist Johnny Marr has a new album. This is a song from it. It's called I Want the Heartbeat. He gave a concert. I don't know if it was last night or recently in New York City. And he had, I think during his encore, he had his bass player from the Smiths, Andy Rourke, actually come up onto the stage and play How Soon Is Now with them. And, you know, that's that old Smith song. Johnny Marr does the vocals. He does a good job. It's you know, like kind of his style rather than Morrissey's. But, you know, they, like, Andy Rourke, you know, I guess he lives in New York now, according to the, according to an article I saw. But he's a really legendary bass player. And he really provided a distinct kind of bass sound on Smith's, you know, the like Girlfriend in a Coma, some of those classic songs. There's a really there's a very powerful bass line in a lot of those, and then all the way from the beginning he was a big underpinning of the sound. So here Rourke's about to join him on stage. play pretty well, don't they?
They do.
Play that live.
So that who's playing that?
I don't know if you know, might be one of the guitar players. Johnny Moore and another guy playing guitar. Have you heard anything? I was traveling last weekend. I wasn't following the news as closely, but I guess there was a lot of stuff. He had talked about the mother of the accused Boston bombers.
Yes.
And this woman's become such a pariah in the media, and I just find it kind of remarkable how many people are just going out of their way to hate on this woman and attack this woman. Like, she's obviously just saying, I don't know what she's motivated to say. And, you know, people are really going after her. Like, I mean, you know, isn't it kind of gotten a little kind of out of control? And some of the stuff people around Boston are saying and how there's just that atmosphere.
There's a lot of pent up misdirected anger towards her. You know, they can't really yell at the bombers because one's in a, one's dead and one's still in the hospital, right?
I don't know. He's probably in some secure prison facility or something. Yeah, it's not right. Like he's accessible, is he?
Right. So it's like they want to target somebody and they want to evoke that emotion, and she's the person they're going after.
Yeah, so the loudmouth on the TV.
And here's how Tamerlan's mother describes her son.
But all around, he was really nice and very, like, he never rejected anyone American just because they are Americans.
Really? He never rejected anyone American just because they were American? After opening our arms to you, we should be grateful that you and your terrorist son didn't reject us? And listen to what this loving mother said to her 19-year-old son, clinging to life.
You're gonna lose a tooth. You'll lose a fucking tooth.
I don't care if my youngest one is gonna be killed today. So I want the world to hear this. And I don't care if I am gonna get killed too. Okay? And I will say Allahu Akbar.
Does that sound like a mother already devastated by the death of one son? Or a woman on her own radical jihad, willing to sacrifice yet another son?
They're throwing that word. That's the, you know what, I think using the word jihad gets them. That's just been the big word lately, the big meme. So
now you knew he was a Muslim jihadist? That you raised a Muslim jihadist? If he's innocent, why would he even need to go to Guantanamo? And get this one.
Why did I even go there? Why? I thought America is gonna like protect us, our kids. It's gonna be safe for like any reason. But it happened opposite. It's just America took my kids away from me.
Really? America took your sons from you? They killed Americans. They injured more than 200, blinded, deafened, and blew the legs.
So then there's some people, there's people with other opinions about the whole situation too.
Yeah.
Hello, thank you for watching the Clinton Report. The fuck Boston? What the fuck Watertown? Having your Fourth Amendment rights stripped away from you and then chanting, USA! USA! You, are you fucking kidding me? Do you realize what fucking pussies you look like right now? You're fucking on lockdown like you're prisoners. And you're chanting, USA! USA! Don't fucking chant USA, because the United States are not united with you in your thinking, okay? The rest of us out here watching you right now are fucking embarrassed by you. We are embarrassed that you let your civil liberties go by the wayside to catch Obama. We gotta get Obama. He bombed the marathon. Are you kidding me? Get the Obama. He's a 19-year-old kid. He's gonna kill all of us. Get the Obama. Get him. USA. 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 Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? Our founding fathers would have shot all of you in the faces for being so fucking stupid.
You're gonna lose a tooth.
Oh, you don't want to be free? You're
gonna lose a tooth.
Really? Really? USA! They got the bomber! Hey, Kathy, did you hear they got the bomber? They got the bomber? Oh, thank God. I was getting tired of sitting here lost in my house. Oh, my God. Well, thank God they have the hopper so that they can watch the TV while they search for the bomber, right? Right? People, I am from a town where the fucking ghetto bird is up like every fucking night, okay? I mean, there's shootings like every fucking night. And guess what? They don't put the whole fucking town on lockdown just so they can go get the fucking 25-year-old kid or the 19-year-old kid who shot 15 fucking people. No, they don't. They don't. It's not even, no, they don't. But you let your whole fucking town be put on lockdown. Two towns, actually, be put on lockdown to catch one 19-year-old kid. Do you understand the cost of those fucking resources? But you know what was most expensive? The biggest price paid that day? Your loss of your liberties. Fucking massholes.
Massholes.
Yeah, the focus on the Texas plant explosion and the Boston bombings and that kind of stuff has brought some attention away from the gun control issue to some extent.
Sure, we need guns now.
Wait, I don't follow. What do you mean?
Well, now we have terrorists, so now guns are okay.
Oh, so you're being sarcastic.
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of out there ideas being thrown around. I know I've played Glenn Beck clips on the show before, but this is a pretty good indicative, I think, of the temperature of the right now.
Ordinary Americans understand the times that we live in. I don't know if you've heard the latest news, broke to me about an hour ago. Started out as something entirely different when I first heard the news, and I'm telling you, this is a sign of the times we're living in. I want you to understand, I'm going to tell you a news story first. I'm not saying this to you. I'm saying this to the simpletons that are in the rest of the media who will report. Glenn Beck said this is what happened. Let me tell you first the news story, then I'm going to give you my opinion on what I believe we should be looking for here.
Oh.
About what actually happened.
Went into the airport here in Houston just about an hour and a half ago, and fatally shot himself to death. He had an AR-15 with him. He was in a security checkpoint at Houston International Airport. Reports indicate the body was found in the lobby of Terminal B at the airport. Houston police say an air marshal at the field fired at the suspect, missed. Man then dropped the AR, picked up a pistol, and shot himself. That's what they're reporting now. That doesn't make sense to me. Now, here's what my sources are telling me, along with my opinion on what we should be looking for. I have been looking and fearing moments like this. If it's not this one, it will happen in the coming days. My law enforcement sources here in Houston are telling my team that this man is from out of town. He is staying at a hotel. The police are now searching his hotel room. His intent, according to my sources, was to take out as many people as he could at the airport with an AR-15. First of all, the idea that this is a coincidence, that this is happening at the airport with the NRA, while they're having there is too much to believe. If I were a journalist, let me correct that, if I were an honest journalist, I would be looking for these connections. Look for the connections of who this man is.
He has a bunch of idiots clapping at him.
To the Uber left. I believe that, and only because I have been looking for this, I believe this man could fall into the category of somebody who has lost his job, is depressed, etc., etc. Somebody comes in off to the side, winds him up, says, oh, you should make a statement. You should make a statement. I believe that's probably, I shouldn't say that. I believe it is a very good chance that that's what happened. He then gets to the airport. He realizes, it's pretty clarifying, I would imagine, when you kill people. He realizes that's not who I am. He shoots in the air, drops the AR.
What?
The air marshals come. He realizes there's no way out.
Where does he get any of this?
He shoots himself. If I were an honest journalist, I would find out where these guns came from. Were they purchased or were they illegal? Oh, if they're illegal, I could guarantee you this is a setup.
Some guns.
Knows history. I do. At least I know enough history to know about the burning of the Reichstag. Let's say a prayer of thanks. At least this man came
oh
to
my
his
gosh.
Senses before he actually killed himself.
What?
These are the conditions that we as Americans.
Shit. Now. So that's I don't know. It doesn't. I don't really know what exactly he's saying, but it's some out there bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So I'm.
You're listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. This is episode 86, recording May 4th, 2013.
May the 4th be with you.
That's right. If that's your religion, because in Britain it's a very popular religion, and I think pretty soon they're going to be able to say. There's rumors that the Jedi, I don't know, priests or whatever, the Jedis will be able to say weddings in Britain. They'll be able to get permits to give, you know, wedding ceremonies.
Star Wars wedding ceremonies?
Well, I guess they would be themed Star Wars wedding ceremonies. One of the things I saw that was pointed out as an irony is that I guess in the Star Wars universe, maybe at least in some of the movies, Jedis aren't supposed to get married.
Why not? Because they're fighting?
It's not on me to explain the Star Wars universe, but I think from the plots of some of the movies, the Jedis aren't married.
It's a breakdown.
Well, so, I mean, there are people, though. It's a very big religion in Britain. Like, it's one of the biggest religions. I think there's Catholicism and Anglicanism and Islam, and then I don't know how many other religions are bigger than that in Britain. Look, there's one. There's definitely Australia comes up in the autocomplete also.
Uh-oh.
Well, sure. There's even a well, here it's like there's the Jedi Church. You don't really know, I don't know. I guess you would think that George Lucas would probably be best off just founding an official faith based on Star Wars, although I guess he doesn't own the rights. I guess Disney probably will. Because then, Disney could just have it. I can picture it kind of being like Mr. Burns a little bit, like where he says, you know, you may not only work for me, but and buy your power from me, but you may worship me as your god. And then the first ceremony doesn't go that well.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, Disney could now say you could worship me as your god through running the Jedi religion. Like, the official, you know, canonical branch or whatever. And, Now, speaking of niche religions, I have a new screensaver on my computer.
Yeah.
But it's the production machine. It's the one recording right now. So I'm going to take a little bit of a chance by turning it on. But I'm going to go to the screensavers. I have a new religion from, a new screensaver from a religion called the Epsilon program. Epsilonism. Have you heard of it?
No.
Well, they claim to be a combination of religion and science and have, like, the answers or something. Let's see. There we go. So, I have a screensaver that has the 12 goals of Epsilonism. And, let's see. Maybe we could get the music going a little too. It does have music. We are making an assault on happiness. We will be generous in ways that are upwards and ways that are manifest. The goals of Epsilonism will continue to be revealed in due time. Kiflam. The Epsilon Pledge. Epsilonist Pledge. All good things come from craft, that is the fact on which Epsilonism is built. K-R-A-F-F. Epsilonism is a science as well as a religion. In fact, we are the only religion that is also a science and which is concerned with seeking out truth. As real truth seekers, we are willing to pay to make the search go better. In this way, we are investing in our future. The 12 tenets are central to our life.
You can be fed, or you can...
As is the investment we have made in the future, yeah. So, okay, so you know what this is? This whole thing is an elaborate publicity campaign for the upcoming Grand Theft Auto 5.
Oh, that's really cool.
So there's some more information about it online. They've allowed some gaming journalists to play it, or I guess watch it. You know, watch it play, and there've been a few videos and articles around the web about what GTA 5 is going to be like, and it's like it's going to basically be, you know, your Grand Theft Auto game, but with three characters. So it has a guy who's good at driving, a guy who does like melee fights, and a guy who's good at fight. I don't know, maybe some other. It's got three characters. I guess you can kind of switch between them.
Oh, that's interesting. I think I remember you talking about the different characters, and they might have like different strengths or different connections or something.
Yeah, and I guess there's maybe a little more of that RPG type element, like was in San Andreas, where the players acquire skills or things like that over time. So yeah, I mean I think the Grand Theft Auto games since 3 have been pretty cool, and this is gonna be one where. Like they're gonna have, like one of the things I heard people saying on one of the videos is that the game kind of looks a little bit like Red Dead Redemption,
mm-hmm.
Which actually, you know, I'm a big fan of Red Dead, and I guess they said like it seems like there's a lot of a huge map, a lot of like woods and animals and just like a lot of detail. And they're, I mean, the studio that did L.A. Noire, I think, is basically shut down, the one in Australia there. But I think a lot of the same people that worked on Red Dead Redemption probably are working on this. And it's like, I mean, it has that very lifelike kind of detail, I guess. But now with the color of like a kind of slightly reimagined L.A., you know, as Los Santos, because it's going to be on the West Coast.
It looks really cool, and you can play yoga in it. It's one of the activities, according to Now Gamer.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah. See, it's going to have a lot of those games, you know, in the game, right? That Rockstar's had for many years, but I think this might be taking it to a new level.
Yeah, that looks like Venice Beach, right?
definitely has the look and feel of Venice Beach. Yeah, I think the graphics are going to be great.
Vespucci Beach.
I'm glad they're going to release it for the current platforms, you know? It's always great when they make a really good mature game on a really good mature platform, like PS3, you know? Instead of waiting for the PS4 to come out, because that isn't really that far away. But it looks like they're still on track to release it for PS3.
The other thing I read, which I really like, is that the whole entire map is going to be open from the start of the game.
Oh, that's great. So you can just play it and enjoy it from the beginning and not have to fight your way out of certain levels and areas. Yeah.
And it's 3 times as big as Red Dead Redemption.
And that is an enormous map.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's got an underwater area, too, so it makes it 5 times bigger than Redemption.
Yeah, I heard that it has... It's kind of... I heard that it's like a lot of the real world, that a lot of it is underwater, and so it represents that well. Well, cool. Well, it's been a good time talking to you, Jessica, and I will look forward to next time. And thanks for hanging out with me for Podcast 86. You can see some links to some of the stuff we're talking about and more information at the website. Just go to djmcloud.com. Look for Podcast 86.
Go Dodgers! They're playing SF today.
Cool. Thank you.